This sermon is from the series Fulfilled, How Moses, the Prophets, and the Psalms Speak of Jesus. It was preached at Crossway Church in Battleground, Washington. We hope you enjoy.
John Thomas Oakes is a songwriter who, he and his friends were invited to play at a coffee shop one November. I think it was a Starbucks. And it was packed, as I'm sure it is. Everybody wants to have a hot beverage when it gets cold outside. And so they had a blast. They were belting out all their favorites from the 40s through the 90s. And so he did this emotional rendition of a classic, If You Don't Know Me By Now. And he says that he noticed a lady sitting in one of the lounge chairs across from him. And she was swaying to the beat and started singing out loud. And afterwards, she came up to him and said, I'm sorry if I was too loud. I hope it wasn't a distraction. He said, no, we love it when people sing. And actually invited her to come up and sing with them. He said, what song do you want me to play? And she said, do you know any hymns? And he said, of course, I cut my teeth on hymns. I grew up in the church, and that's how I learned how to play music. And so he said, which song do you want me to play? And so he thought about it for a while, and he said, hey, do you know the Eye of the Sparrow? And his friend thought about it for a moment, and she said, sure, let's do that one. So she put down her things, and she started to belt out the song. And if you know, it's a pretty powerful song. And so after a quick impromptu two-bar intro, he says she started to belt out in the most sweetest voice you could ever hear, why should I be discouraged? Why should the shadows come? And the whole audience of coffee drinkers was transfixed. He said it was so silent that even the cappuccino machine stopped because the workers wanted to hear it. And she continued just to belt out the lyrics. And when it rose to the crescendo of a conclusion, she says, I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. He says it was a holy moment when that last note sung, and the audience actually rose to its feet and applauded like any good Disney movie would. But he said, I embraced my friend. He said, you've made my whole year. That was so beautiful. And she said, well, it's kind of funny that you chose that particular hymn. And he said, well, why is that? She said, well, that was my daughter's favorite song. And he said, really? She grabbed my hand. She said, my daughter was 16, and she died of a brain tumor last week. He said, the only thing I could think about saying in the midst of hearing that gravity of news was, are you going to be okay? She smiled through her tear-filled eyes, and she squeezed his hand, and she said, I'm going to be okay. I just have to keep trusting the Lord and singing his songs, and everything will be just fine. Well, I opened up my sermon this morning because that is a simple truth, isn't it? It's a simple truth that oftentimes we feel dark. Oftentimes we feel abandoned. Oftentimes we wonder where God is and if he's at work in our lives. And in those moments, we need to be honest. We need to be sharing the hurt of how difficult things are. But we also need to remind ourselves of the truth of Scripture and the powerful songs and prophecies that God has made and the truth that it contains. Well, Micah 5, which we heard a little bit of in our reading, is exactly that. It was written by Micah to the people of Judah in a very difficult time. A very difficult time. A time when literally armies are coming at them. The people who are supposed to be their godly rulers are terrible. And they wonder if God is actually going to be faithful and keep his promises of sending this promised Messiah that they've been longing for. And Micah, a prophet of the Lord, speaks the words of Micah 5 to the people. And they are words of hope. And they are words for hope for us as well as we go through difficult things and as we wait for Jesus to come back again. And so we are going to look at Micah 5, verses 1 through 5. As I said last week, we are starting a new sermon series for Advent. We're just going to call it Fulfilled. When we went through Luke and we saw that Jesus said, look, everything from Moses to the prophets to the Psalms says that I was supposed to be here and that I am doing exactly what God's plan always was. And so we looked at Genesis 3 and a chunk of Moses last week. We're going to look at a prophecy this week. Any guesses what we're going to look at next week? A psalm. And so we will look at a psalm that points to Jesus as well. And so this is the word of the Lord, Micah 5, verses 1 through 5. Marshal your troops now, city of troops, for a siege is laid against us. They will strike Israel's rulers on the cheek with a rod. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be the ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. Therefore, Israel will be abandoned until the time when she who is in labor bears a son, and the rest of his brothers return to join the Israelites. But he will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth, and he will be our peace. Well, as I said, Micah prophesied in very difficult days. Most historians think that this was written around 700 AD in a time when the Assyrians were attacking the nation of Judah. And so they are in a very difficult spot where the people are coming, a nation who is coming after them, a people who were brutal, who had done terrible things to other nations, and they were coming after them. And so they were very, very scared. They'd already wiped out the nation of Israel, the northern kingdom, and they were coming after the people of Judah as well. And so we see in 2 Chronicles where this is recorded, where they came after them, an army started coming after them. And it's in about this time that Micah wrote these verses. As I said earlier, it was not a great time even internally. I mean, the people who were supposed to lead the nation in a godly way, the rulers of Judah were actually evil and corrupt. So bad that Micah says, "Hear this, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel, who despise justice and distort all that is right." Maybe we feel sometimes that our own politicians are that way. But again, it's a difficult time. It's a time when they know that trouble is coming. And Micah doesn't pull any punches. He actually says it's going to get worse. There's going to be a siege that is coming. You're going to have to marshal your troops. What do you do when the hard times come? How do you respond to them? Because the fact of the matter is that you and I face dark and hopeless days as well. Now, I have not had to fight in a live under occupation. I've not had to go through a difficult situation like that. But the reality is that we face difficult and dark days. We can go through things, times of depression and sadness. We can feel like the loss of a loved one or where they go through sickness or health weighs us down. It may be a loss of a job or financial difficulty or just the effects of inflation. It may be an unfulfilled longing for a spouse or for kids, or difficult days may involve a physical sickness or even health for ourselves. Maybe it's relational strife with our spouse or our kids. I mean, I could list all kinds of different things that could bring us down, but darkness often pervades it. There are often clouds of uncertainty. And when that happens, how do you respond? What do you put your hope and trust in? Well, Micah encourages the people of Israel to put their hope and trust that better days will come. Not because they're great or because they're going to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but rather better days are going to come because they are going to be sent the Messiah that they've been longing for. Now, Micah makes it absolutely clear that it's not going to happen right away. In Micah 5:3, he says, "Therefore Israel will be abandoned." And they are abandoned. They have a siege that takes over Jerusalem, and the people of Israel and Judah are carried away, and they are brought to captivity. And it seems, even in that situation, that God is even further than in the time that Micah wrote. But Micah says, just because you feel abandoned and just because things seem dark doesn't mean that God is not at work. In fact, your hope will come because God will come and he will provide a ruler, he will provide a Messiah from Bethlehem. Now, Bethlehem, we need to know, is an insignificant place. I tried to think of what would be like our most local thing like Bethlehem, and I thought Ariel Washington. I literally typed in Ariel or Battleground, and I zoomed as close as I could. Guess what? Ariel Washington didn't pop up on Google Maps until I typed in Ariel Washington. It's a place that you may know, a zip code. We've had people that have come to our church from there. It's on the other side of the river. But it's not a place that we talk about often. It's not a place that you've even heard of unless you've actually lived there or driven through there. It's insignificant, it may seem, and Bethlehem is that place. It's a town that, quite frankly, people often had forgotten in their time. It's not a place where you would think a king would come from. I mean, kings come from major cities, and in Israel's situation, they come from Jerusalem. That's where they come from. That is the place of the kings. But Micah says sometimes God works in different ways. Sometimes God actually works in insignificant and small ways, in ways that we don't expect, and that's exactly how he's going to work when he brings his Messiah. This Messiah is going to come from Bethlehem, an insignificant place. But it should also give people hope, because Bethlehem is the place that King David came out of. In 1 Samuel, we see that that's exactly what he says, that Samuel is sent to Bethlehem, to the house of Jesse, to go and anoint a new king. Now, last year, we actually preached to the book of Ruth. And Bethlehem plays a big role in there. And so for us, sometimes it may seem like Bethlehem is this important place, but it's not. It is Ariel, Washington, a place that sometimes is forgotten. But when the people heard that a ruler was going to come from Bethlehem, right away, their ears would perk up. Because that King David that they had heard of, the king that God blessed, the king that brought them peace and strength and might, a king that served the Lord, a king that had even been prophesied that his ruler would reign forever and ever. Well, he came from Bethlehem. And if God worked in that way in the past, then maybe God could work that way in the future. And that is exactly what Micah says. Micah says, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over all of Israel. I want you to think how powerful that would be. How powerful that would be for you to hear, even though you are ravaged by war and you have people coming at you in all different directions, that not only will there be a lack of war, but there will be peace, and there will be a ruler who will be benevolent to you, who will take care of you, and we'll see how he will take care of them in a little bit. But this is the word of hope that Micah brings. Now, it's easy for us to skip over this, but I want us to pause there and just think about this way in our own lives. Because often, I don't know about you, but I want God to work in big ways. Usually the big ways that I want. But that's not often how God works. God often works through those small things. Now, I'm dating myself. I actually thought I should have my girls watch this movie with me. When I was a kid, I mean, I don't know when it was, but I remember the movie What About Bob? Do you guys remember that one? What About Bob is Bill Murray. He's a really scared guy. He has that fish because he doesn't want to lose the fish. And he sees a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist has a book called Baby Steps. And Bob takes it to heart. And so anytime Bob would go through a challenge, he would say, baby steps, baby steps. If he had to go to the bathroom, he'd say, baby step to, you know, to the door. Baby step to the bathroom. Baby step to the stall. Baby step to sitting down. Baby step. Baby step, baby step. That's how he got through everything. That's the repeated line throughout the movie until he's sailing. Now, his version of sailing is being tied to a mask because he's so afraid, but he did a baby step onto the boat, baby step there, and he got the thrill of sailing. But the whole movie is about those baby steps. And actually, the interesting thing is it's through the baby steps that he did get further freedom and that. But God often works the same way in our own lives. We want the end result that we forget that God works through the baby steps. And those baby steps may seem insignificant to us, but they're not insignificant to God's plan. And what we see, and even this quotation, this prophecy of Micah, where he says that the hope of Israel is not going to come from Jerusalem or its big leaders or the political structures that are in place. No, the hope is going to come from an insignificant town and an insignificant tribe or clan in the tribe of Judah, where you don't think anything good could come from. But he worked that way in the past, and he's going to work that way in the future. And that gives us hope in our own lives, that God can use small things in our own lives to work and bring hope in the midst of sometimes darkened situations. God often works in small steps to bring us to faith. He removes one doubt, one misconception at a time. He can instill one truth into our heart as we fight it, as we fight things like accusations from the devil. When we face overwhelming things and when it seems dark, he'll often put somebody in our path that will just give us hope for that day. Or what he'll do is he'll remind us of a verse, and that verse will just give us the encouragement that we need. He'll think of a lyric of a song or whatever it could be. But God often works in those small ways. And so I want us to think about that this holiday season. Don't miss those small ways that God is at work in your midst. God's used the small thing, the small place, the Ariel Washington, Bethlehem, in the smallest clan that has almost been forgotten to bring about the ultimate king. But that is the hope that we have, isn't it? That's the hope that Micah gives. And the hope is that this king will be both ancient and future. He talks about him in a very strange way. He says his origins are from old and ancient times, but yet he's going to come in the future, because you're going to feel like you're abandoned before he comes and before this childbirth happens. Now, we'll understand and look at how Jesus fulfills this in a minute, but I want you to see that Micah gives this strange prophecy to the people. This one who's ancient and future is there. But the way that he describes him would have been such a sense of relief to the people. The first thing that he says is that he will shepherd his people. Now, again, if Bethlehem didn't point the people back to David, this should. David was a shepherd. And he used that shepherd imagery in many of the Psalms. Many people of us love Psalm 23, right? Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not fear, because you lead and you guide me. And this is the image that Micah wants his people to hear, that even though it seems dark right now, even though it seems that God has abandoned you, you can have hope. There is hope. And the hope isn't in you or in your rulers. The hope is in the coming king. And that coming king is from of old and of the future. And when he comes, he will take care of you. He will shepherd you. He will provide you with everything you need. He also says that he will bring priests. And again, I ask you, just think about what it would be like if you were living in a war torn country like Israel or Gaza, and you heard this thing of peace without any war or any threat. How refreshing that would be. How awesome that would be to hear. Well, as I said earlier, we know who that Messiah is. The gospel makes it absolutely clear that this person, this individual, that this Messiah figure, the Savior that Micah said is coming, came, and he is Jesus. Jesus is that promised king. Now we know it because, one, Matthew makes it absolutely clear that Jesus fulfilled this prophecy. Luke records in Bethlehem, Matthew records in Bethlehem, but it says that during when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, and then Matthew says this curious situation of the wise men, the magi, and they come to Herod, because when somebody sees a star and they think a king is born and they have to worship him, think of all the small steps it had to take to get them to go to that spot, that God had to work to get them to do that thing. But if you expect a king to be born, you go to Jerusalem, because that's where kings are born. But when they come to King Herod, King Herod didn't have a new baby. And so King Herod had to figure this out. And so he went to the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and they knew. They made the tie that there must have been a baby that was born in Bethlehem in Judea, because Micah had foretold it. And Matthew wants us to see that connection. He wants us to see that Jesus is that Messiah figure that Micah prophesied about. And the Bible speaks very clearly of Jesus playing both of those roles. He is the divine and ancient king. John, when he starts his gospel, says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning." If ever there was an ancient thing, it's from the very beginning, God himself. And he says that the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father. Now, Jesus says about his own self in John 8, "I tell you the truth, before Abraham I was born, I am." And so it's not just the gospel writers who say this about him. He took that claim himself. Or there's Colossians 1 that says, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all of creation. For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers, authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and all things hold him together." And so Jesus is that ancient divine king, but he is also that future king. Philippians tells us and Revelations tells us that Christ has been exalted to the highest place, where he is reigning in heaven. We looked at that in the ascension and the end of Luke. And what he says is that he's going to reign there until he comes again to judge the living and the dead and to create a new kingdom of eternal peace that Revelations talks about. And so Jesus is that ancient and future king that Messiah talked about. But Jesus also picks up this own image himself, the image of the good shepherd. In John 10, he says, "I am a good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for a sheep." And he says, often, if it's just a hired man, they don't care. Let the sheep die. I'm not going to give up my own life for it. But he says, "I am the good shepherd, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, I know the Father, and I will lay down my life for the sheep." And so if we are in that dark moment, I want us to think about what that image of the shepherd means. The shepherd means that he will lead us and guide us. He will walk us through the valley of the shadow of death, and we will not have to fear, because we know that his rod and his staff are there comforting us. And so if we are in a dark time, and if we feel like we don't know where life is headed, we have hope that we are not alone in this. God will strengthen us. God will guide us. He will lead us through these dark moments. And so we hang on to verses like Romans 8 that says that we know that in all things God can work for the good of those who called him, who've been called according to his purpose. That's our hope. Not that we'll get it figured out, but rather that Jesus and the Messiah has come, and that he will be the good shepherd who will take care of us, who will guide us. And I love that Micah in his prophecy says that he will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord and the majesty of the name of the Lord is God. And what that means is that Christ's power is powerful, that it can overcome any darkness, any kind of force. This Messiah will be amazing. Now, that would have been great to the people of Israel, because the Assyrian forces seemed like they were huge and an overwhelming superpower of their day. And they were just a little nation. How could this ruler protect them? But if it was in the power of the Lord and in the might of the Lord, well, then they had a chance. That same word speaks to us here today as well, because Jesus is just as powerful, and his spirit will empower us as well. And so even when we feel weak, and even when we feel overwhelmed, the truth that we need to remind ourselves, the songs that we need to sing to ourselves, is that God is a good God who can strengthen us and encourage us and empower us and guide us. And he is at work even when we don't see him. But we also have hope. Because this world as we see it is not the end. And actually, our darkness, those times of feeling dissatisfied, those times of feeling overwhelmed, they remind us that this world is not what it was God's original intent, and it was marred by sin. And we feel the effects of those sins, but it should put a longing for us, a longing for us for a better day. And that's actually what it is, isn't it? The dissatisfaction we have with the darkness around us shows us and pushes us to want to see a better time, the time that Christ has, where Christ will bring peace or shalom to the ends of the earth. Now that word peace is one that we can throw around, especially in this time. I mean, we were working on a holiday Christmas card and it's like, well, what can we say? Peace actually seemed pretty good, but we didn't put it. But peace is more than just a lack of war. Shalom means everything is restored. And when God has already restored the most important thing, Jesus' death provided a pathway of peace between God and humanity. And what I love is Micah even predicts this. He says, who is God like you who pardons sins and forgives his transgressions? You do not stay angry forever, but delight to show mercy. You will again have compassion on us. You will tread our sin underfoot and hurl all our iniquities into the depths of the sea. If ever there is a powerful image of what that Messiah did, that is it. Jesus suffered on the cross. He took the punishment for our sins, but in doing so, he can extend mercy to us. He takes those sins and says, the payment has been paid in full. They're gone. Now when God views you, he views you through the righteousness of Christ. And we get just a foretaste of the relationship that we can have because our relationship with God is restored. But the dark days remind us that this world is not all it should be. And it should also put a longing into our hearts that when Jesus comes again, he will usher us into his eternal kingdom of shalom. That's why we light the candles. That's why we do Advent, just as a moment in the calendar to pause and reflect and remember that we are still waiting. We are still waiting for God to come again. But that day of peace is described in Revelation. And it says that there is no more sadness or pain or death or mourning or crying. For the old order has passed away. And it's in this future kingdom of shalom where our relationship with God, our relationship with each other, our relationship with the earth and everything there is going to be completely restored. It's just not a lack of conflict. It's patching everything back together the way it should be and eliminating all the effects of sin. You and I still have that future hope awaiting for us. Jesus is that future king, and when he comes again, he will provide us with the kingdom of shalom. For some of us, that's a powerful thing because we'll see our loved ones again. For some of us, it's a powerful thing because we won't have the effects of sin in our own lives, the broken relationships, the broken pain and suffering that our bodies feel. But hopefully it gives us the most hope that we can have because we can be with God unhindered because of the work that Christ gave us and he did on our behalf. And so today we sit and wait, even though we have longings, even though it may seem dark, and we may wonder where God is at work. The words of Micah have as much power in our own lives today. We can look back and see that God came as a baby. He came and was born in Bethlehem, proving that he fulfilled that promise. He repaired our relationship with God so that we can look forward to the future that we have and that relationship that we have with him. And so we know that darkness won't win. Light will win. God's plan will win. And we can trust that he is our good shepherd. He will take care of us. He will guide us. And he will empower us to get through whatever it is that we see. So why should I feel discouraged? Why should it, when shadows come? Why should my heart be lonely when I long for heaven and home? When Jesus is my portion, my constant friend is he. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. For his eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. So let not your hearts be troubled. His tender word I hear. And resting on his goodness, I lose my doubts and fears. Though by the path he leadeth, by one step I may see. His eye is on the sparrow. I know he watches me. Whenever I am tempted, whenever clouds arise, when songs give place to singing, sighing, when hope within me dies, I draw closer to him from the care he sets me free. His eye is on the sparrow. I know he watches me. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. For his eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. We have a good shepherd who will lead us and guide us and watches over us. And he will be coming and give us the peace that our hearts long for. And until then, these words can give us hope and meaning. Let's pray.
You have just watched a sermon from Crossway Church in Battleground, Washington. We hope that you enjoyed it, and we'd love to have you come join us for a worship service on Sunday at 10 a.m. at 311 North Parkway Avenue in Battleground, Washington. If you'd like to find more information about us online, you can find it at crosswaychurchwa.com.